Welcome to Speak Up, the podcast for high-performing introverts and ambiverts, where we reveal these amazing secrets of charisma and communication from the A-listers so that you can get the recognition and the opportunities that you deserve. And I'm your host, Laura Camacho. I'm especially excited if you're new. Of course, if you're not new, I'm also very excited. For those of you who don't know me, I'm your magical communication godmother, coach, and strategist. And we are now releasing episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. So this episode is for you if you want to learn about C-suite communication, because we're talking to someone from Russell Reynolds, which is a pretty big deal if you know anything about recruiting firms. I think they specialize in finance, but they're like the McKinsey of recruiting. And this guest today, Dr. Ty Wiggins, is the CEO whisperer. He's the one that coaches CEOs when they start a new position. So these are your takeaways real quick, like what the C-suite wants from you in terms of messaging. If you want to join the C-suite, you're going to find invaluable help here. What the CEO wants from you, another help with that executive communication level of skill. What your CEO would like for you to know about his or her situation, what most CEOs are missing, and you might be able to help them with this, the mindset and perspective you need to reach the C-suite. This was so valuable, and a big, huge mistake that less experienced leaders often make in their communication. So this is a really big deal if you are interested in either becoming the C-suite or communicating better with the C-suite. And without further ado, here is Dr. Wiggins. So, Dr. Ty Wiggins, I am super excited to talk to you. I did not know you were going to be tuning in from London. I feel more posh and that I should have a cup of tea. Anyway, I see you as the CEO whisperer, as I explained in the introduction, you know, about your book and your role at the famed and respected Russell Reynolds. What was your path to being the CEO whisperer?
Firstly, thanks for having me on the show. It's a confused path, definitely. I think it took a long time for me to work out where I really wanted to be. I actually started straight out of university coaching basketball, so I loved the coaching frameworks and communication and atmosphere. I then worked through a varying sort of number of industries and roles until I got to the point where I was coaching for a living. And early on in the coaching journey, I was exposed to transition work, which I found fascinating. You know, this gap for leaders to step into new roles and how do we support them and help them through what is a difficult time. And then over the years, it progressed to a real passion for CEOs and the CEO transition, you know, transitioning into the loneliest role with most eyes on you and exposure and accountability was fascinating. So that opportunity really presented itself with Russell Reynolds about 5 years ago, and I've been with the firm for 5 years.
I didn't even know that transition coaching, just focusing on that, was a thing, but I can definitely see from my experience how sometimes people seem to not know exactly what they're supposed to do first day on the job as even a VP or a CFO. Like, they know generally their responsibilities, but in the day to day, especially if it's a new company, and like you said, all eyes are on you and you're supposed to have all the answers and you don't know. I think it's so helpful for an executive to have a safe space and a person who's familiar with the territory to help them. Your book is not called The CEO Whisperer, everybody, just to remind you. It's called The New CEO. So how does the new CEO different from the old CEO?
The title of the book is really around the conversations that you hear around businesses when there's a new CEO. You know, people say, Laura, so how is the new CEO? What are you thinking? How's this?
Okay.
The new CEO component is time of change for a CEO. If regardless of whether it's a first-time CEO or a second-time CEO, it is a really difficult period in that, to your point, there's so much information to understand. There's so much to learn. There's the culture. There's the people. It's a really challenging time. So the new CEO needs to do things in a different way and a different approach from someone who's been in role for some period of time. And I think to the point for a lot of your listeners, a lot of that comes down to communication. Communication, when in transition, is a key skill.
I imagine that it is. And as usual, it seems like in business and maybe in life in general, at the moments that we need to communicate where it's the most high stakes and it's the most high impact, we're the most nervous. And because we're nervous, we feel not relaxed and it's just harder. I know one of your quotes in the book was one I like so much by Vince Lombardi. He said, it's not the will to win, but the will to prepare to win. You know, even if they're not the new CEO, but new in a role of higher and greater responsibility, what do you recommend to prepare for that?
So whenever a leader goes through a transition and they're entering into a new role or a new organization, there's a heavy scrutiny on the early messages that they make and the things that they say. So I've had the opportunity to work with a lot of leaders where we've had to work diligently to unwind something they said very early, sort of off the cuff, that people have picked on and held on to. And that becomes the description of this person. That was the person that said this. This was the person that said that. So the preparation around what you will say and what you won't say is crucial. I mean, you talked about being nervous and therefore communicating poorly. The other aspect that we see is people are anxious because they want to prove to the organization and to themselves that they're the right person for this role. So they have this bias to action and bias to, I need to say something now so that you think I'm good enough. And that often drives some really interesting and regrettable comments.
You're absolutely right. And that's actually a mistake even more junior people make. It's always trying to prove that they're suitable for the job when actually everybody already accepts that. So it's not helpful in so many cases. And also I can see maybe somebody trying to show that they're authentic and then still putting their foot in their mouth. I guess what I would probably do.
I worked with a CTO in a large insurance company and I had the opportunity to prepare him for this process. And the way we prepared was I said to him, you're coming out of an organization which is traditionally faster in how it moves into a friendlier, slower organization. You're used to having an opinion and you're used to sharing it. But the opportunity is not to share your opinion too early. And so we rehearsed a couple of lines, such as, it's too early for me to have a fixed opinion. I need to ask more questions and so forth. So we had a spiel. Anyway, he gets into the meeting in the first week and he gets asked a question about what his view is of a certain project. He answers correctly. He then gets asked about 15 minutes later again. He answers correctly. The third time he gets asked, he says, this is the reddest project I've ever seen in my life. 12 months later, we are still trying to unwind that comment that he deemed this project to be so far in the red, having never really seen it so early in his tenure. It became part of his, unfortunately, reputation in the organization.
That's right, because everybody's looking at you when you're new and they're over-indexing on every single thing you say. So I might think that a general rule in your new role is keep your mouth shut as much as you can and ask more questions and delay. But I can certainly understand when you're asked something over and over again, it just seems like the logical thing. All right, I'll tell you. I think this is a disaster. And that's not very helpful all the time.
It's not out of a bad intent. It's that they feel that not answering the question is inauthentic. But it's not inauthentic. It's just lacking the context. The more senior you are, the more there's almost a bit of a game in that if you come in as my new leader, the sooner I can get a read on what's important for you, the quicker I can mold into that and be safe. So I need you to tell me what you think. And you need to not do that and get me to explain to you what's happening in the organization so you can get the context before you actually commit to a opinion.
I love that. So make them wait, everybody. When you get promoted and everybody is looking at you and they're trying to read you, especially your subordinates, be wise. They'll get it. So Ty, you know, the people that are listening to this are extremely intelligent. I know a lot of them, very bright, very good looking also. So what we're talking to, the future C-suite and the future CEOs, highly conscientious, high performers, 100%. What skills do you recommend they master right now?
I would say there's a number of areas where you think communication plays a key role in how people are viewed for potential promotions and new roles. One is obviously their ability to be a very effective listener and almost having coaching type conversations with people. So the insight that people have around what's actually going on and how people are going to respond, senior leaders will look at more junior leaders and go, that person has a really good handle and a really good understanding and has the confidence of the team, et cetera. So there's the listening component, which is really important. In terms of the communication, every organization has expectations and standards. So communication is one of those areas where it's not often written down that the C-suite leaders communicate like this and the heads of all the VPs communicate like that. But we know what it is. So this observation of if you are in a role, you need to be looking very clearly at the next role and trying to get a read on how do they communicate? What is the language that they use? What is the tonality? Where are the, you know, adulations in terms of how they communicate what they're passionate about? And how do they best sort of mirror that or mimic that to respond to how they're communicating in their role?
All right. So I'm taking away, of course, I'm taking copious notes here. So listening, so imagine you meant that was the first one that you said. I think it says a lot that if you want to be a supreme leader in the organization, your number one skill has to be listening. And I would add to that, not only listening, but letting people know that you hear them. Because sometimes I've had this happen to me. Maybe it's happened to you. I know it's happened to some of the people I've coached that you actually were listening, but for some reason that perception didn't land. And so the perception was you were not listening. So listening effectively, letting the person know that you're hearing them and being able to have that coaching conversation. And I think that takes a level of observation power to observe, hey, Ty is really good at this. I think he could handle this thing. This other area, I'm not so sure about. Maybe he could, you know, develop that. It's not only listening, but it's observing and then taking that observational power. And you, if you're, you know, a senior engineer or senior director, like really fine tuning your observational powers of your boss, your skip boss. What is their love language? What is their priorities? What are their keywords that they use over and over again? And modeling that, or at least thinking at that level, which is tends to be less granular, would you say?
Agree. So two other areas that I think your listeners might consider. There's a tipping point often as people progress in their career where their technical skill set is no longer the benchmark for their success. And it's quite challenging. People go from being...
Yes, that's exactly what's happening.
From a technical expert to a technical leader. So when I think about people coming up technical divisions or functions, there comes a point where their communication needs to be, and I'll use this term gently, but dumbed down so that people outside of that division understand what they're talking about. So if you are working with people within, say, a technology division, there's certain jargon and language that you can use. But when you get to the C-suite, how do you translate these concepts to finance, to marketing, to HR, to supply chain in a way that they can really pick up on it, understand it, and also help you to further develop what you're doing? So there's a step up where you go from it's all about your technical skill to now it's your leadership of technical people to the C-suite where you, it's now your enterprise level thinking. So at each of these levels, your communication needs to shift. And I think people that do that well have an easier pathway to progression. The second point I'd make is I've worked with a lot of organizations where they've said to me, we want you to help Ty. Ty is not very strategic. And I've gone and met with the individual. And I thought, no, this person is, you know, thinks very strategically. And what I've learned is that there's a difference sometimes in being able to understand it and talking about it. So leaders who talk in meetings about tasks, projects, and then carefully connect it to the strategy. So this is great that we've done this work. And remember, this is really tied into our strategic objectives of XYZ. Leaders that talk like that, or that talk about the values, you know, let's congratulate Laura. She did a fantastic job doing X, Y, and Z. And just to remind you, that's right in line with our values of integrity. Leaders that talk like that get rated by other individuals as strategic or values-based or visionary. So sometimes it's taking the extra couple of words to make sure that you are demonstrating that you understand this bit is tied to that bit.
Exactly. I love that you said that, because it's something that I say. So, and thank you for the validation of my work. I appreciate that. Yes, Laura did do a great job. The enterprise level thinking and understanding versus having other people understand that you do get it. Because a lot of times, especially with more introverted leaders, they tend in their minds, in our minds, we're like, well, obviously this achievement connects to this value or this strategic objective, duh. But even if it's obvious, it doesn't hurt. In fact, it does help that they see that you see the connection there, the connecting of everything, every accomplishment, every win or lack of a win, every downfall, every mistake or error. It has an impact. We don't operate in a vacuum. So, Ty, since you talk to these CEOs, what did they wish their VPs and the people that report up to them, what did these CEOs wish that their subordinates knew or did differently? I think that would be really juicy to know.
One of the concepts that I talk about in the book, which is a fairly well-known concept, and it's the one of the first team. So I think if you're a VP and you're aspiring to the C-suite, I think this is something to really consider. The first team concept is one where you're actually asking the individual, who is your first team? So we exist in many teams. And the challenge at the C-suite level is that the CTO will often say, my team is the technology division. And it's not, that's not their team. Their first team is the C-suite. The team that they manage is below. The team that they exist on is here. So if you ask the CEO, what would I like my C-suite to do more? Often the CEO will say, I would like the C-suite to operate as this is their first team and solve enterprise-wide problems with an enterprise mindset, not come to these meetings lobbying for resources for the team below them, because that makes for better decision-making for me as the CEO. And this is quite a shift.
It is.
Because this is the team that you've always been a part of. Even at the VP level, the people that are your peers, they're your first team. So you'll see CEOs saying, my expectation of you is that when you get two calls simultaneously, one from the C-suite and one from the people below, the C-suite is the one you pick up first. This is where your primary obligation comes in. This is your team. That is their team.
Wow, that's mind-blowing. That is so valuable. And I'm just going to recap to help everyone grasp this jewel that Ty Wiggins has bestowed upon you, and you can get it in his book, also The New CEO, that your first team is not the team you lead. It's the team where you're a team member. And I think just that shift in mindset, which is significant as day is from night, is going to help you to think at that enterprise level, which let's face it, I mean, that's kind of challenging. If you come up through finance, or you come up through operations, or you come up through marketing, you know, to really connect your work to the whole enterprise level, it's not easy.
Well, just on that, the visual representation for the people listening is, we'll often talk about a wide T or a narrow T executive. So if you imagine that there's a narrow top of the T and a long vertical, that signifies someone with limited enterprise understanding but deep technical expertise. Whereas a wide T is someone who is very good on the enterprise side and not as deep in the technical. And this is the shift of, I might be the CTO, but I am far from being the best technologist in the company anymore. And that is my role as CTO. It's not my role as technical specialist. So how do I let go of some of those things and how do I operate at that level? The other answer to your question about what CEOs would want the VPs, the junior VPs, the C-suite, is to tell them the truth. So they often talk about the fact that they never get the truth anymore. Everything is filtered. You know, there's this great quote in the book from Mark Bitzer at Whirlpool. He says it gets filtered and filtered and filtered. And he says, I hate filtered coffee. I like espressos. You know, he's sort of saying there's nothing is coming up. People want to please the CEO. We either wait to see if we can fix it, or we tell the CEO either what we think they want to hear or not what they don't want to hear. So what would CEOs love? Absolutely treasure individuals that are brave enough to tell them the truth and tell them what's actually happening. And yes, you need to be brave in certain circumstances because not all CEOs are going to be fantastic about this. But if you can find an opportunity to share what's important, that will make you stand out.
Wow. Another diamond-studded concept there. Tell the truth. Well, I want to ask you this because one of the humorous parts of the book, I don't know if it's humorous. I found it kind of funny. The surprises. Ty has this section of like the surprises that people discover when they become the CEO of a company. If you were to sum it up, the big surprise is that things are not what they thought they were. And I think it's because people aren't telling them the truth. Is that it?
Yeah. The expression I use is to CEOs to remind them that now that they're CEO, they will see more. Nobody sees as much as they see, but they will hear less. So if they've come from a role where they're privy to a certain level of honesty and communication, so think about a CTO being promoted to CEO. There's a level of communication and candor at this level amongst this individual's peers, which disappears. And then the people that they talk often with are now a level below again. They lose some of the information that they actually need. And this is to your point earlier, at exactly the time they need the information the most, when they're new, they don't have it.
It explains a lot of the things that people below, that sometimes a CEO will make a decision or a move and you're like, what? To just like, and it's not always the case, but it could be that the CEO doesn't have the full picture because, you know, and these organizations can be so large. I mean, thousands of people.
Correct. And I think one other thing that might be valuable is the concept of communication versus action. Now, this is for anyone in a transition. Again, the more senior you get, the more this resonates. But there are a number of individuals who feel that their good work stands for itself. So what I see is leaders coming into new roles and they just put their head down and start delivering. But the more senior you get, you actually, early on, you get more bang for your buck through your communication than your actions. I'll give you another example. A leader went into a role at the C-suite. First week in, got a bunch of feedback about a particular meeting that was ineffective. Everyone said the same thing. So she canceled it without attending it. And she didn't explain to people why she was doing that. Yeah. So it landed really poorly. She became the person that canceled the meeting before she ever went to it. And that became a bit of a mantle. She would have got better bang for her buck by saying, hearing everyone saying this, I'm going to cancel this meeting because everyone says it, you know, and signpost it rather than just do it. But she thought she would impress by just getting on and making a change. And this is the bias to action that we really need to back off and really be deliberate about. Our communication early on is so important. The old adage of we judge ourselves by our intent and others judge us by our behavior. If we're not overt about our intent, people just have the behavior to judge and they will judge, which is another blind spot. People think, oh, they won't take it so seriously or they'll forgive me if I make a mistake. No, and often no.
Yes. So bias to action. And I can think of so many people listening and myself too, like we love doing stuff like go, 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 do, do, do. We take pride in that because by golly, we get stuff done. So it seems like to be a CEO, you just need to have so much patience to hold back, right? And are you saying like to let other people do things or just take your time? Is that what you're saying?
It's really around communicating first. Communicate, communicate, communicate until you exhaust yourself, basically. Because this is how people are going to make these early judgments. And this is how people are going to understand your actions. So if you, as new CEO or new CTO, if you don't set the narrative about why you're doing things, other people will. And now you're beholden to that. So you need to be really clear about what you're doing. So one of the great pieces of advice is that when you're new in role, especially if you're new in an organization, that you start with a clear message or theme around your transition, saying something along the lines of, I'm very excited to be here, really excited to get started. This is a great organization. I have a lot to learn, and I will be taking X number of weeks or months to learn the organization. So forgive me while I ask all the dumb questions, and I'm not going to make any massive decisions, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm setting a theme now of listening and learning. And now I've set myself up to be able to respond to these questions around my opinion really, really clearly. And I'm setting expectations. This is really important. People in organizations, when new leaders come in, one of the things is that the person's already made their mind up. And one of the challenges that we have when you join a new organization, one of the aspects that make you feel good is finding something that you expected to find. So your confirmation bias can be an overdrive. Because I'm going to walk in, I'm going to see that as a problem. I knew that was going to be a problem. So Ty, you are the right person. You are up for it. You've got this. You're okay. You know, the other expression is you need to inspect what you expect. Again, this bias to action, backing this off, spending more time communicating, you know, really learning and listening and understanding. It helps you to really make a success out of your transition.
I love this so much, Ty. Thank you for validating the job of a communication coach. I promise you all, I did not pay him to say that. You heard it from the CEO Whisperer. It's communication even over your action, really paying attention to your messaging. And I love that preemptive, like, I'm not going to make any decisions. I'm curious. I want to learn. This is what I'm here. I'm going to learn first and then make some decisions, which actually fits into the 30, 60, 90 day model that, you know, that is the tradition for starting a new role. But it seems like when you're CEO that people don't respect that. They want like 30, 60, 90 minutes.
I would say that in many cases where I've worked and supported CEOs, the CEO's expectation for speed is greater than the organization. So the organization is thinking a certain time period and the CEO is trying to run really quickly. One of the questions that I encourage people to ask if you're joining a new organization is something along the lines of, how long does it take to learn this place? And people always have a variety of answers. If you were to ask in Russell Reynolds, they'd say 18 months. So as I'm a new leader coming into the organization, if I've asked enough people this, when I start to make decisions, which I will need to within that time period, I can at least signpost the fact that I understand it's early. Say, listen, I understand that it takes about a year to learn this place properly. However, time pressures, business pressures, we need to make some decisions on this, so we're going to make a decision. It really softens the, Ty actually cares, he's trying to understand, he hasn't just come in with his mind made up.
And to contextualize and to, yeah, like you said, soften, like, I would like ideally to have more time, more resources to put into this before moving or making this decision, but I can't. So this is what we're doing. And I think that's just an easier sell. It's easier to follow because, you know, there may be people who don't agree with it, but the way that's positioned, I think it's really hard to argue. So I want to ask you, for people who want to move up to the C-suite or from C-suite to CEO, how important is networking?
I think it's really important. And I think networking is, for some people, an absolute chore. For other people, it comes quite easily. You know, if you're naturally extroverted and enjoy the company of people, you'll find this quite easy. Networking with purpose is really important because people need to sponsor you. They need to champion you. They need to understand why you're a good option for a particular role or for a promotion. So I think it's important that you have good stakeholder engagement programs. But when someone starts a new role, one of the things I ask them is, how are you going to judge your relationships with the stakeholders? What are you going to do to form the relationship? And by what criteria are you going to measure success? You know, is it time spent? Is it understanding of their division? Is it their understanding of your division? Each individual has a slightly different measure. But that networking component pre-getting the role and especially post-getting the role is really important.
Yes, I love that. And you're absolutely right. It can be a chore, as can be talking about the accomplishments, doing that part of connecting to the values, connecting to the strategy, connecting to impact. It seems at a certain level of thinking unnecessary, but actually it can be the most important part. And I think that would help a person with enterprise level thinking if you're having conversations with decision makers across the verticals, right? To understand their point of view more clearly. This has been so valuable. I only regret that I'm not getting a percentage of all the promotions that people are going to get as a result of listening to this conversation. But I know one day my reward will come, Ty. Tell me, is there anything that I haven't asked you that we need to know before we close this?
I think the last thing would be just some hints on some of the things that you might want to include in your early communication when you're new in a role. The first is being comfortable saying, I don't know. People don't expect you to know it, or they understand this. So be comfortable saying, I don't know. This is really humbling and authentic when a leader is new. The second is, how can I help? So you often get problems brought to you and your instinct might be to try and solve them. A better question is, how can I help? The third is, what you just asked me is a fantastic question. When you're in early one-on-ones, asking some version of, what didn't I ask about but should have, is a fantastic question. Because a lot of people are fairly compliant. They'll answer your questions, but they won't necessarily raise things if you didn't ask about it. So if you want to speed up your learning in a new role, that is a fantastic question. And the last point would be, when you're new, you have this unique ability to share a collective opinion, not your own. So one of the best ways to test your ideas is to stay in the present tense and say things like, what I am hearing is, what people are telling me is, what I am learning is. And that way you can say, what I am hearing is that one of our key problems is XYZ, and you don't own it, but you're allowed to test it. This language, incredibly powerful.
I love that. And I think you could even use that if you're not new. Like, I'm under the impression that blah, 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 blah. So that is a extremely useful communication like phrase. And how can I help is a way. Sometimes this is, I think, more for newer leaders, managers. It's so fun to solve someone's problem because you know right away what to do because you've done it. And it can be like, I want to tell them. So instead say, how can I help you? So this has been so interesting, so valuable. I think we've gotten like a secret peek into the CEO's office and what's going on in his or her mind, what it takes to get there, what they're looking for, how you can communicate. Even if you don't aspire, if you can have CEO-friendly messaging, that's not going to hurt you in the organization. And also, so many people listening, I know that their confidence comes from knowing all the technical details, and yet they know that what got them where they are is not what's going to take them moving forward. And so this pulling out of your expertise and to the enterprise level, I think is going to be so helpful for everyone. And everybody listening, thank you for tuning in, and I will catch everyone on the next episode. Well, wasn't that an awesome interview with Dr. Wigand with Ty? I loved his accent. You know, he's half Australian and half American and located in London. And he was so generous. I appreciate he was really thinking of my audience, of my beloved, highly conscientious high performers. Like, you need to think differently. You need to think enterprise level.
You need to think about communicating less with your reports, asking them more questions instead of giving them as many directives. Just so helpful. And if you want a tool to help you or your team with this executive level of communication or executive presence and that kind of thing, I do have a tool for you. It's called Speak Up 360, just a very customized 360-degree tool. Email me hello@speakupwithlaura.com. And if you're not on our email list, I send out a very short, fun communication tip every Monday. Would love to have you as part of the community. Thank you for being a part of this, and I will catch you on the next episode. Bye-bye.